Chapter 2: Why Are Human Beings Ethical? Objective: to establish the ethical dimension in human beings. 2.1: Anthropological Grounding. Human beings are ethical beings because they are intelligent and free. Their ability to comprehend their situation, to comprehend things, and to comprehend themselves is the foundation of their ethical conscience, whereby their ethical being is directly proportional to their ability to comprehend and assess value. By being free, people have the possibility to decide their life, their actions, and the way of carrying them out. Their responsibility comes from the possibility to act in different ways, in pursuit of different objectives, and with different motivations. All of this can only happen in a being that is free. We know that ethical capacity is strongly influenced by biological nature, although people are not hardwired to follow their instincts, but rather under obligation to act freely. Ethical norms, values perception, moral codes, attitudes, principles, conditions, thus have their grounding in human nature, which is not completely determined by instincts and circumstances. Ethical capacity is expressed in three kinds of activities that are determined by biological nature. A. The capacity to foresee the consequences of one's own actions and to establish differences between means and ends. B. The capacity to formulate value judgments on the basis of abstract concepts and not just concrete and immediate impressions. C. The capacity to choose among different ways of proceeding, to process outside information, and to choose what is thought to be best in terms of personal codes. Humans are ethical beings on account of being called to live in community with others because they are social beings and develop in reference to others. The source and root of ethics is found in human reality. Ethical behavior and values have a natural basis and constitute a universal substrate in space and time, but they are not independent of cultures, although they are also not products of them. All cultures are rooted in human nature, and while they are not identical to human nature, they are sustained by it to a greater or lesser degree. This makes it possible to think about a universal culture. The ultimate root of people's ethical being is found in their unfinished condition, in their call to fulfill themselves, in reference to and in recognition of others. To the question, why are people ethical? We can offer the following answer. Because they are intelligent, free, called to fulfill themselves in their own actions, and to help others in their self-construction. The attribute or quality of ethical refers fundamentally to human persons, and only then, and in reference to them, does it also characterize things, actions, laws. The ethical problem is always a problem of the person. 2.2, the human person's ethical structure. We have said that people are ethical beings on account of being intelligent, but what does the word intelligence mean here? Intelligence, above all, refers to reality. Animals are defined in advance by their structures, and thus remain within the threshold of their stimuli. This happens with people as well, but external reality does not necessarily determine them, which opens the door to the ethical option. Thus, people's first and most fundamental responsibility is to construct themselves. The greatest thing people can make is what they make of and with themselves. People have to consider reality before carrying out an action. In their freedom, they may prefer one response on account of something, thereby turning stimuli into possibilities, not requirements. In this way, people adapt to their world and insert themselves into it through the intelligent options they choose. Animals always respond according to the stimulus. But people are different. They have to find a way to make their response adequate. They have to justify their acts. Adequate action has to be done for a reason, motivation or cause, in pursuit of something, purpose. But what exactly makes action adequate? Among the possibilities that people are confronted with, there are some that fulfill them more and others that fulfill them less. Some are more adequate and others are less adequate or inadequate. Their freedom is not only about choosing one out of all the choices available, but about choosing the one that seems most suitable and in accord with their preference. Not all actions make people free, even though they are freely chosen. When they perform an inadequate action, far from gaining freedom, their freedom decreases. People affirm their freedom only with that which fulfills them. The wrong use of freedom actually enslaves them. But why do we prefer certain things? At the root of our preferences is the basic goodness of reality. When people prefer what is best for them, they are acting adequately. The perception of the goodness of reality is something that they achieve through their intelligence, and thus they are capable of choosing what is best for them. Human beings' ethical structure includes an inborn inclination to good that precedes even their intelligent choice. People by nature are oriented toward what is right, and accidentally, by deficiency, toward what is wrong. From their orientation toward what is right comes the hope of increasing progress in the moral domain, and their critical capacity in the face of deficiency. From their accidental orientation toward what is wrong, and fundamentally from their nature as imperfect, unfinished creatures, comes their inclination toward evil. The lack of identification with what is right comes from a predisposition by which they are oriented in an inadequate direction. Humans are the only beings capable of changing the world. 2.3 Binding Ethical Reality and Natural Law. With respect to people, reality has different meaningful aspects. Reality is true inasmuch as it relates to the human mind, which is capable of making a mental representation of reality. And thus, truth is directly related to the understanding that knows it. There is no truth without a mind to discover it. But it is also grounded in reality, inasmuch as reality is the object and criterion of cognitive activity. Reality is the normative criterion for knowledge. In the same way, values have a basis in reality, which is why we can speak of objective values, of valuable things. Their value, however, is related to the human mind that is capable of assessing that value, and to the will that is capable of desiring them. Values are objective realities with reference to the person who appreciates them. There is no value without a mind will to discover it. We thus realize that values and norms of behavior are to be found in people's inner being. They are human beings' projection and way of being human in the face of reality. In reality, we also find an aspect that is binding for people. People find not only justice, but also their personal obligation to act fairly. But there is no objective obligation without a mind conscience to discover that obligation. Obligation is rooted in reality, but it is always perceived by the human mind, which is capable of discovering it and being bound by it. In this way, ethical obligation can be discovered progressively and dynamically, and its grounding in human reality explains its dynamic character and the different interpretations it has had over the centuries. But its grounding in reality makes it an objective norm and criterion that binds people according to their cultural levels, historical situations, and personal circumstances. Duty. The elements of duty or of obligation are a person who perceives, mind conscience, a binding reality, reality that obliges, and a link between reality and person. This is the element that is explicitly expressed in positive law. Good, truth, persons, and reality allude to perception, to will, and to freedom. There is no obligation nor binding reality if there is no free person to perceive them. Binding reality is the real fact apprehended by a free being, or better yet, the free apprehension of a real fact. Ethical adults are more bound to the perception of their obligations than to the perception of their right. Humans are free beings, and as such can spontaneously love good, truth, and other people. Then, moved by their freedom and love, they can bind themselves to them. They come to discover not only their free dynamism, but also their responsibility, which emerges from their encounter with binding reality. The concept of natural law has been understood in legalistic and judicial terms, when it originally meant nature's way of being, a concept that was more descriptive than legal. In its original conception, it was directly linked to reason. The term binding reality seems more appropriate because it belongs more to the ethical domain and does not necessarily include legalistic connotations. Another consideration is that natural law has become overly ontologized or reified so that it no longer expresses its relation to human consciousness. It has come to be understood as relating to an abstract, once and for all nature, and this conception leads to affirmations that take the form of abstract, isolated, objectified, and unchangeable principles, detached from the circumstances of the person knowing it and from her historical dynamics. Natural law can be wrongly conceived as a pre-existing entity subsistent in itself, which becomes the foundation of an ethics that gives no thought to human beings in their specific historical circumstances. Overriding all interpretations and misunderstandings that the notion of natural law has engendered is the fundamental and essential message that norms for human action are rooted in the human person's inner being. Natural law is the rule of behavior that the world in its order demands. Among inanimate objects, it consists of the laws of physics. Among plants, the laws of biology. Among animals, their instincts. And among human beings, reason. Summary: the structure of human behavior consists of conforming action to reality. and it is people themselves who must do the conforming. All actions, in order to be truly human, must be adequate in the sense of in accord with reality, consistent with it, compatible with it. We will call this first dimension the ethical structure. Human beings conduct their lives. The way they conduct it is called conduct or behavior. They cannot do otherwise because their lives are not predetermined like animals. On the contrary, their structures demand that they act freely. They have to choose to survive. The idea of adequate action can be understood in a second sense. Actions conform not only to nature, but to the ethical criterion, binding reality, or natural law. In this sense, adequacy is not just correspondence to reality, but correspondence to the ethical demands of reality. We will call this second dimension binding ethic. Natural law or binding reality is based on the reality of things and of human beings themselves in their nature. Binding ethical reality is grounded in the ethical structure and cannot exist without it. It thus makes sense not to act arbitrarily or subjectively, but in accordance with certain objective demands. Plus Christian reflection. Within the framework of a Christian anthropology, human beings are the creatures of a creator God and redeemed by Jesus Christ. As creatures, people are called by God to continue his work by living as his image, as lords of the world, called to fulfill themselves in freedom, responsibility, love, and communion with him, while respecting, mastering, and transforming the world. This call comes out of their own dynamic nature. It is there that they hear God's call. Christian anthropology is substantially optimistic. God made man, and indeed, it was all very good. The evil in human beings is explained as an accidental attribute brought about by sin. God's crowning work is the fashioning of man. In the light of faith in Jesus, God's plan takes on a new dimension. People respond to the call by making Jesus' message theirs, identifying with it and with his project, becoming his true images, as St. Paul would say. Jesus called this project the kingdom of God, which consists of God's presence and communion with him as God of all people, and of a relationship of brotherhood with others. This has a double dimension, historical and eschatological. Historically, it translates into the construction of a world of justice, of peace, of progress, of solidarity, and of unity. Eschatologically, in the sense that full and definitive communion with God takes place in eternal life. Thus, from the Christian perspective, what forms the basis of human beings' ethical being is God's call to them to fulfill themselves as beings in the world and as children of God, in accordance with the plan manifested in creation and definitively in the life and message of Jesus. Church teaching upholds the notion of natural law. John Paul II, quoting Leo XIII, points out that natural law is none other than human reason itself, and that God calls man to participate in his own providence, since he desires to guide the world, not only the world of nature, but also the world of human persons, through man himself, through man's reasonable and responsible care. The natural law enters here as the human expression of God's eternal law. A more in-depth look. Just as it is important to assume that a life not valued is not worth living, it is crucial to realize that a life without commitment to something larger than life is not worth living. We could ask ourselves if there are universal values and obligations that are always and everywhere valid for the human species. If we look at people's way of being and acting in their different cultures, we can answer our question with a yes. We can see that for everyone anywhere, it is better to grow than not to grow, to eat than to starve. Everyone feels the need to express their feelings. Everyone suffers when they are tied up or mutilated, or when they are subjected to physical or psychological torture. There is the sexual urge, love for one's children, the need for dialogue and companionship. The encounter with others obliges us to discover the ethical structure of all people, and at the same time the existence of the sense of obligation and common human values, elementary as it may be in some cultures. From common and universal needs come common and universal values and demands. Activities. Analyze a situation such as choosing a job or a study program. A. What motivates you to choose one alternative over another? What purpose are you aiming at? B. What are your predispositions, previous inclinations? C. What is at the root of your preferences, preferred behaviors? D. What good things do you see in the situation? Analyze the following case. In the company where you work, you find out that someone has committed fraud, but it does not show up right away in the bookkeeping. What is your duty in the light of these events? Where does it come from? How do you justify your behavior? Analyze the ethical content of a decision. Giving money to a boy who cleans your windshield on a street corner, or to a blind person. A. What ethical demands do you see in this reality? What do you feel an urgent need to do? B. What options correspond the most to your intelligence and freedom? C. How do you justify your decision? What reasons do you give? D. What is the best decision in the context of reality? E. What decision can enhance your freedom the most? True or false? The human person necessarily feels the urge to be ethical. True, false. Ethics consists of channeling our received nature, what we are, with our acquired nature, what we do. True, false. The structure of the human person is not necessarily ethical. True, false. Ethics arises because human beings are not just what they are, but what they ought to be. True, false. From common and universal needs come common and universal demands. True, false. Natural law is nothing other than human reason. True, false. People have the right to lead their life as they see fit, without obeying anything or anyone. True, false. Reality is independent of human beings and demands nothing of them. True, false. We feel obliged to do something on account of our perceiving it as good, not the other way around. Perceiving it as good on account of our feeling obliged. True, false. Bibliography. Aristotle, Nicomachean Ethics, UM Mexico City, 1982. Classic work containing a metaphysical and anthropological reflection on the foundations of ethics, taken up baptized by St. Thomas Aquinas. Its contributions to the sense of good and freedom continue to provide a sound orientation for reflection and discussion from a contemporary perspective. Aranguren, José Luis, Ética ante Editorial Madrid Indefinida. This work is a compilation of current discussion between the classic vision, Aristotelian Thomist, and contemporary philosophy. It offers an especially fruitful anthropological and ethical analysis of the Spanish philosopher Xavier Zubiri, Propuestas Morales Editor Tecnos Madrid, a short book in which the author makes a summary of some of the most important contemporary ethical viewpoints. He emphasizes the role of ethics as a proposal more than as a prescription. Corina Adela Ética sin Moral Tuot Tecnit Manides 92. In this book, the author gives an overview of the different currents of modern ethics from a perspective of critical dialogue. The author tries to show that modern morals grounded in personal autonomy and social solidarity are still legitimate. Leap Ignace, La Nueva Moralos Lole, Buenos Snakewater. In the light of modern human sciences, the author proposes new ethical approaches that address the structures of contemporary human beings in a more effective and appropriate way. Lobo Ricard Tuing, Una moral para tiempos de crisis, Eder Sígueme Salamanca Salamindu. The author proposes a morality in which a person's ethics is meaningful only within the process of social liberation and effective transformation of society. The function of morality is understood as the proposal of options that foster individual and collective liberation. Millán Puelles, Antonio, La Libre Afirmación de Nuestro Ser, Eder Real Madrid, 1904. In this book, the author proposes a justification for realistic ethics, i.e., grounding the ought-to-be of free human behavior in the human person's own being. The author believes that there are objective moral norms of absolute value, and that all forms of ethical skepticism are contradictory in both theory and practice. The book is written in difficult language and is overly long, 500 pages. Orduña Rincón, Error, López Azpitarte, Praxis Cristian Fundamentación, Madrid, 1800. This work provides the foundations of Christian morality from an interdisciplinary perspective in creative faithfulness to the gospel. It contains, on the one hand, a historical sketch of moral theology and the moral dimension of the gospels, and on the other, a justification of Christian ethics. Savater Fernando, Ética como Amor Propio, Consejo Nacional para la Cultura, Mexico City, 1901. This book frames ethics in terms of self-love, the link between virtue and pleasure, the relationship between the individual and society. What is ethical is what fosters a person's self-affirmation. A lucid, provocative, and well-written book. Thomas Aquinas, In Decem Libros Ethicorum Aristotelis ad Nicomachum Expositio, Turin, 1934. Using his scholastic method, St. Thomas analyzes and comments on Aristotle's propositions. Vidal, Marciano, Para conocer la ética cristiana, Verbo Divino, Navarre, 1900. Complete and balanced summary of moral theology, updated for the present day. The situations and solutions that the author provides are grounded in scripture, in the teachings of church tradition, and in the results of human science. Subiri, Xavier, Sobre el Hombre Alianza, Madrid, 1986. This work brings together a series of articles on metaphysical anthropology. It offers important analyses of different dimensions of human reality, their influence, and repercussions on the constitution of personality. Questions. Why are humans ethical? Because they are intelligent, free, called to fulfill themselves through their own actions and to contribute to the development of others. What are the necessary requirements for an ethical attitude? A. Ability to foresee the consequences of one's own actions. B, to formulate value judgments. C, to choose from among different options of action. What constitutes a person's ethical structure? A, taking the initiative to conform one's own actions to reality. B, being oriented by nature toward what is right, and by accidental attribute, by deficiency, toward what is wrong. Under what aspects does reality present itself to people? A, as truth. B, as object and criterion of cognitive activity. C, as normative criterion for knowledge. D, as value. E, and as a binding ethical aspect by which people feel compelled to act in a certain way. What do we understand by binding reality? The property of being that, upon being perceived by a person, creates an obligation or a duty. It is the free apprehension of a fact that a person perceives and appropriates based on the person's ethical structure and on the reality itself. What do we understand by natural law? The internal call by which, in the face of reality, a person feels compelled to act, affirming some values and rejecting others. It is the participation of eternal law in the rational creature. St. Thomas Aquinas, STTH the 2, 91-2. When we say natural law is written in our hearts, we are using a number of metaphors. What is it essentially that we are saying? That people must follow their reason, which orients them from their deepest being. When does the feeling of obligation arise? When we apprehend binding reality,